Hello. Hi.
Hi, Jeff. Wow, you sound much better. Hold on just 1 second. I'm handing it over to Joe.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Joe. Jeffrey Wells.
Much better. Okay, great. Okay. Sorry about that.
It's okay. So I was just wondering if I could ask you for openers about the narrative attempts. So there's already been obviously one narrative film about Whitey Bulger, which is The Departer. At least to some extent, he was based on the Nicholson character was based on Whitey.
Yeah, I mean very loosely based. Yeah.
Loosely based. Yeah. But there's a film called Black Mass that's coming out apparently next year.
With Johnny Depp.
With Johnny Depp, and Scott Cooper is the director.
Yeah.
And do you know anything about that? What that's kind of focus? I presume it's focusing on his younger years, or I don't know what the.
Well, you know, I believe it's his, his relationship with the FBI and how he came to power, and what enabled him to operate as an FBI informant.
Right.
You know, that's the territory that Black Mass covers.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually Depp, had asked to see my documentary, so I sent him a copy.
Right.
Scott Cooper saw it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish them well with the film. You know, I guess any Hollywood version of the story, reduces complexities into a convenient narrative arc. Expected with a feature film version of it.
Right.
I saw photos of Bulger's, as we all did. You know, of Depp's transformation to Bulger is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
My concern about that film is, Black Mass came out in, was written in 98, 99, came out in 2000, and a lot of things have happened since then that, challenge the conventional narrative about the Bulger story. So,
mm-hmm.
I think some people are concerned, that some of the aspects of the story are not grappling with the issues raised at this trial, including Bulger's contention that he was never an informant at all for the FBI. So it'll be interesting to see how some of those issues are handled in the film.
Do I understand that from your film and what you just said, that up until and including a sentencing and after the sentencing, he's always denied? What's the point of denying that at this point? On his rule. I mean, I can't understand the rationale for saying, all right, I'm not going to confess to this ever. Because what does he lose? I mean, it's done. He's in jail. He's not even going to get out. So why not just...
Well, I think that's the fact, that's why one should take notice of the fact that he's denying he was ever an informant. Because for him, he did not use the trial as a means to try to defend himself against the crimes he was actually accused of. I mean,
yeah.
It was important to him to set the record straight that he was never an informant, that there was a
right.
much deeper and more corrupt relationship with the FBI.
Yeah.
Again, I can't tell you whether or not that's true,
yeah.
but there are a lot of troubling aspects to the informant story that don't quite add up, some of which I detailed in the film, like his alleged informant file seems to be a work of fiction.
Mm.
And when you compare it to a known informant like Gregory Scarpa in New York, whose informant file was 55,000 to 60,000 pages full of unique information that led to a prosecution,
right.
and Bulger's file is, 700 pages full of repetitive and non-unique information that never led to a prosecution, it does make you scratch your head about the deeper relationship. Bulger contends he had a relationship with the FBI because, A, he was paying a lot of people off for information, and, B, he was being protected,
mm-hmm.
not because he was an informant, but rather he had a deal with the then prosecutor, the top prosecutor in town, Jeremiah T. O'Sullivan,
right.
whose focus, the entire Department of Justice focus in the mid-80s was to bring down the Italian mafia. And the conventional story is that, well, Bulger helped with that as an informant.
Yeah.
Bulger's story is, no, I didn't help with that at all. What I had a deal with Jeremiah T. O'Sullivan to protect him from a retaliatory strike from the mafia in exchange for O'Sullivan's promised that he would never prosecute me. Mm-hmm. And so you do have to ask yourself, why would he, you know, spend the trial not trying to fend off murder charges, but to try to set the record straight? Mm. And I can't tell you why. It's one of two reasons. It's either, as the Boston media feels, it's either an old criminal's last-ditch attempt to salvage his image before he passes into the metaphorical criminal's hall of fame, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because the worst thing for a criminal to be is an informant, and in fact, it goes even deeper in the Irish culture. You know, Irish revolutionaries fighting the British lost many a patriot to informants and turncoats, and it's deeply ingrained in the Irish culture not to be a rat.
And you make that point in your film very clearly. That seems to be entirely likely, from my point of view. I mean, that's something that's really like a dishonorable thing to any good Irish criminal. So I would imagine that what you're saying is exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Right, but then you have to wonder why is that informant file deeply flawed? Why are certain protocols of FBI informant handling, why haven't they been followed, these protocols? For example, you know, you're not supposed to target the head of a gang. I mean, John Connolly says it himself in an FBI training video, because if you're targeting the head of a gang, the FBI is sanctioning the gang. And here, you know, targeting for being an informant, you know, you don't make the head of a gang an informant. Mm-hmm. And here, the head of the gang, Whitey Bulger, was being made an informant. So there's just things about the story that don't make sense that need to, you know, that for the sake of the victim's family members, because clearly when you're an FBI informant, you're not supposed to kill. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're supposed to keep your nose relatively clean. A little bit of crime is countenanced because you can't blow your cover. But, you know, it seems like the FBI looked the other way and in some cases tipped off, aided and abetted the murder of innocent people while Bulger was an informant. So if he was an informant, it's bad enough, and the level of responsibility has not been accounted for. Right. And I think it's strains credibility to think that one rogue agent, John Connolly, who's sitting in a Florida prison, is responsible for all of this murder and mayhem that ensued under, you know, while Bulger was being protected for 25 years. You know, so again, my film is here to raise these questions and to cover the trial. I mean, the film is called Whitey, United States of America versus James J. Bulger, because it's a film about the trial. And these were the arguments, you know, that Bulger raised. And frankly, you know, some of the lines of inquiry, he was not allowed to present this immunity defense. And I feel, you know, this is, you know, these are questions that should have been allowed to have been presented at trial. You know, I'm no apologist for Bulger. He's a brutal, vicious killer who deserves to be behind bars and frankly got away with murder. I mean, you know, getting two life sentences plus 5 years at the age of 83 is not much punishment, frankly. You know, I hope to make it to 83 under any circumstance. You know, you know, so, you know, it's no, you know, my belief that he should have been allowed to present his immunity defense, you know, has nothing to do with, you know, thinking Whitey got a raw deal or should have been, you know, shouldn't be anywhere but where he currently is. Yeah. But the victims' families, you know, there are people who lost loved ones, you know, because a decision was made not to indict this guy and take him off the streets, despite being under their watch. And why was he being protected? You know, if he was being protected simply because he was an informant aiding in the takedown of the mafia, well, then I say, you know, the government shouldn't be in the business of picking and choosing who should live and who should die by empowering one set of criminals in order to take down another set of criminals. And if there's any truth to what Bulger is saying, that he actually never functioned as an informant, that he was the guy paying FBI people and other law enforcement agencies for information, then it's a much, and that he had a deal of immunity with the then prosecutor Jeremiah T.O. Sullivan, then it's a much deeper, you know, morass that needs to be uncovered.
Mm-hmm. Have you, did you ever find, I was just curious, you know, because I was sort of expecting that perhaps there might be at some juncture in your doc that you might show the story of his finally getting popped in Santa Monica in 2011. Did you ever find any decent footage on that? I mean, I just kind of wanted to see that, you know, him maybe as an end coda or an epilogue or just something like that. I was just kind of interested. Were you ever flirting with that? I know that that's not obviously the immediate focus for your doc, but did you ever...
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the film, I do kind of retell how he was caught in Santa Monica.
Right.
You know, we open the movie with right. Stephen Rakes talking about his extortion story, and then the next scene is his being arrested in Santa Monica at the Princess Eugenia apartments. You know, I didn't overly focus on that because the film is already pretty long and pretty dense, and at some point we had a little bit more of the Santa Monica stuff in the original Sundance version of the movie, which was 130 minutes long, and you know, that the film was just too long at Sundance. People liked it, but just felt like it was too long. And so we cut 25 minutes out of it for the theatrical release. And one of the things that went was a little more information on Santa Monica and the final takedown. And, you know, you're right. I do miss that a little bit. But at the end of the day, you know, in prioritizing what had to go to bring the film to the, you know, to a more manageable length, you know, I just decided to only touch upon it.
Of course, one presumes that you'll offer this longer version, or it will be on the Blu-ray digital version.
No, I think the theatrical version is what's going out there. You know, the Sundance version exists only for those lucky 6 or 7 people who saw it at Sundance. You know, that's it. You know, I think actually some of the, but in all seriousness, I think some of the scenes that we took out of the Sundance version actually will be available as deleted scenes. So people can consume it in that way, you know.
Did I seem to recall that Whitey's longtime girlfriend, who was with him in Santa Monica, she's doing time too, right, as we speak?
Yeah, she got an 8-year sentence.
For basically aiding and abetting, was that it?
Yeah, for aiding and abetting,
right.
You know, which some people feel is a little harsh, but, you know, because by all accounts, Whitey went straight after he went on the lam with her, and seems harsh, but you know, I have mixed feelings about it. She did aid and abet, you know.
Yeah,
just a criminal.
It's, you know, I think it's fascinating the psychological portrait of any sociopath, someone who can basically, you know, as many people do. It's a common trait, which is that you basically compartmentalize. You put certain aspects of your nature or your behavior or your what you see as your necessary survival skills in a particular box, and you live in that box when you need to live in that box, and then you leave that box to be with a girlfriend and go and get groceries and walk the dog and be a nice guy. You know, we all have this potential, and that's what I thought was fascinating, because everybody said, you know, he's a pretty nice guy and gave gifts to his neighbors, and every monster can be nice. There is no such thing, you know.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I'm glad you saw that, because that's one of the things we were trying to show. And, you know, when he was I didn't quite include this in the film, when he was living his life of crime, I mean, he would every night go home for, you know, a sit-down dinner with, he actually had two households, you know, one with Teresa Stanley and you know, her kids, and they would have dinner together, and then he would go to his condo, and there would be Catherine Gregg. So he had this strange need for some level of family structure, you know. And it's interesting how people compartmentalize like that.
And yet there's as your doc points out, there are two women who died at his hand, one of which who... the girlfriend of another guy, help me out, I'm forgetting her name, but she was strangled by Whitey, apparently, right? With a rope or something, wasn't that it?
Right. Deborah Hussey and Deborah Davis. Deborah Hussey was...
Who's the blonde? Who's the
Deborah
blonde?
Davis. Deborah Davis, okay. the sister of Steve Davis, who is right. one of the victim's family members we focused on.
Right, right. And yeah. basically, that her demise was about Whitey's belief that she was a leak and she would probably give him up or something, and that he
right.
didn't trust her. So.
Right, but of course, Bulger denies that he was involved in the killing of those women, and again, is that just the criminal trying to polish up his image? He doesn't kill women, he's not a rat, or is there some truth to it? You know, that's the central question.
Yeah. Well, I you know, that's the most chilling part of it to me, that he would do that. But of course, that's what the law of the sociopathic criminal is. Those who will put you away, you must put them away first, or why, you know, you might as well forget about being a criminal, because that's the way it works.
Right,
you
know? Right, exactly.
And we watch movies, and even though we despise or feel appalled by these characters, we understand the system. Someone's going to rat them out, they've got to take them first. It's not like you're sympathizing or identifying, but you do understand the system. So it's cold and it's horrible, but that's the system that they're living in.
He's a brutal killer who deserves to be exactly where he is.
Yeah.
But he could have been brought to justice long before all these killings happened, and that's to me the larger point of the film.
Right.
You know, he was under the watch of the FBI and, mm-hmm. and could have been part of an indictment. You know, there was this famous horse race fixing case,
mm-hmm.
and he was removed from the horse race fixing indictment in 1979
mm-hmm.
because he was being protected.
Mm-hmm.
And had the FBI brought him in
right.
and the Department of Justice prosecuted him in 1979,
mm-hmm.
many of the victims that you saw at his trial would not have been killed, including Debbie Davis, because or Deborah Hussey, the two women who the murders were just, you know, very cold and calculating. Again, he denies those murders, but obviously in the case of Deborah Hussey, the court found otherwise. But Deborah Davis, interestingly, the court had no finding. They felt the state did not prove its case in that particular murder.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm sorry, but I was a little uncertain as to what happened. There's the guy that the nice-looking guy with the white hair who we meet early on, and he gets picked up at his house, and they're talking about Whitey and what a son of a bitch he is, and so on. And he gets taken out. He gets found at on a roadside. Someone obviously did him. So I still don't know what that was about. I mean, can you help me out there? I totally didn't get why was he was going to testify against. To criminalize Whitey, so a friend of Whitey's decided this guy of all people needs to be taken out.
I think the importance of that case is, at the end of the day, he was killed by a business associate whom he owed money, and the killing.
You're fading away again.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just went away for a second there. Sorry.
Okay. To me, the importance of the rake's killing is not that, I believe the official story, which is he was involved in a bad business deal with an associate who had nothing to do with the Bulger trial, and it's coincidental that he was killed, and we say as much at the end of the movie in a title card.
Right.
But the importance of the rake's killing is, and as an outside observer, what was fascinating to me is that when his body was found and news of his killing, kind of swept through the courthouse, all the observers who were at the trial, debated with equal probability in their minds that it could have been either government interest or Bulger interest that knocked him off.
Mm.
And I don't believe for a minute the government would have anything to do with the killing of a witness. That's a ludicrous claim.
Yeah.
But the fact that people were debating that possibility with conviction demonstrated to me just the depth to which people's faith in the system had been so eroded.
Yes, that's the underlying thing that you can't ignore. And that's why it's almost like, I was watching the whole thing. I think the FBI is dirty. The FBI is their ethos, their way of seeing their job is quite... diseased, it seems, the FBI of James Stewart and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. I don't think there's any resemblance.
Yeah. And what's interesting, there's a whole bunch of movies out, you know.
Yeah.
I was at AFI Film Festival, which is a documentary festival, you know, and I looked in the catalog. There's the Newberg Sting. There's a movie called Silenced. Mm-hmm. There's The Internet's Own Boy, a film called 1971, and my film. Five films at the AFI Fest in Washington, all of which deal with, you know, FBI and Department of Justice problems. So there must be something to it.
You know what I would be fascinated by? Of course, you must have had some interest to speak to Bulger. I mean, isn't now that he's in the can, isn't he permitted to talk to people and be, you know, interviewed and maybe even...
Well, you would think so, but I would guarantee if you made an application to go interview him, that government officials would deny access for security reasons, or come what may. I think the government is dead set against having anybody go talk to Bulger.
Okay. Because, I mean, like he's already established, he's going to lie or contend with all his heart that he was not an FBI informant. That's locked into his Irish character and nature. So what do they have to fear there? He's going to say the same thing that they want him to say, which is that he wasn't in collusion to them. So what? And obviously you're not going to bring a weapon in and shoot him while you're interviewing him. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
I think the government does not want to give access to Whitey Bulger.
It'd be fascinating to hear the guy, wouldn't it? You know, as a kind of a like a supplement to go along with the, you know, just I would be fascinated to just hear his whole thing, you know, because monsters are fascinating. They really are. I mean, there's no question about it. They're you know, because you.
I agree, and I think the government should make him available to people who want to interview him. But I think they'll give you they will block access.
Hey, what do you know, by the way, about apart from Black Mass, which has been shot, right? That's done, Black Mass.
It's in the process of being shot.
Right as we speak. Okay. What do you know about the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon thing? That's not going to happen, right? Because they've been edged aside by the. By the scooper, and right?
Yeah, it's probably, you know, word is it's probably not going to happen, but I have no, you know, this is like second and third hand information. I have no way of really saying, but, you know, one could assume it may not happen.
Right. Did you ever happen to hear through your circles what Bulger thought of The Departed? Did he ever see it?
I wouldn't know that, actually, no.
Don't you think that's a good question? What do you thought, whether he was... I bet his character and his personality. I bet he's probably delighted that Jack Nicholson was in a sense playing him. I bet he was flattered. Wouldn't you think?
Yes and no. I think he's very disturbed. I mean, he claims that all the movies and books about him are completely false. So my guess would be he would be upset by the portrayal. You know, because it's not who he is in his mind. But, you know, I'd be happy to give you the number of the defense attorney if you wanted to ask that question.
Okay. After we get off the line, you'll give it to me?
Yeah, I mean, if you...
This is the guy that you photographed, of course, the guy we got to know in the film, right?
Hank Brennan, yes.
Yeah.
You know, so if you'd like email, you can ask him that question.
All right. So,
Cool.
When will your film be VOD? I know it's in the press materials. I just thought you'd remind me.
Yeah, the VOD is this Friday, the 27th, and opens in New York and Boston theatrically this Friday as well, and then L.A. and other cities in July. I don't exactly know the release pattern. July 11th, it opens in L.A. and other cities, but available on VOD immediately.
Well, as soon as I saw it, I mean, hearing that it was a longer version, I really wish I could have watched the longer version. I'm sorry that it's not going to be immediately available, but like you say, the portions that didn't make it in are going to be extras, so, you know, that way. Because I really liked it, and I thought, once you get to the...
If you send me your address, you know, I'll mail you the longer version just for your own...
Yeah?
Whatever.
Oh, that would be wonderful, man. Thank you. That's really nice.
No problem.